The Johnson Amendment was created in 1954 by Lyndon Baines Johnson, who was interested in making sure that tax-exempt entities like churches and nonprofits are unable to directly engage in partisan political activity. And the amendment is tied to legislation that essentially defines the charitable nonprofit sector. But what it did in law was create a very bright line between church and state, because it applies to faith-based organizations as well. And the reason this has come up during the aftermath of the political campaign is that there was a strong push from a number of faith leaders to repeal the Johnson Amendment because they want to be able to, from the pulpit, talk about political candidates and political issues without any restrictions.
From the IRS perspective, how does that impact tax collection?
Well, it's interesting. There has never been a restriction on faith-based organizations or anyone else to provide their opinions in the political space. What they can't do is have a tax-exempt status while they do it. So what the IRS has to do is enforce the law as it currently stands by ensuring that those organizations that have filed for 501c3, which is really charitable nonprofit status, do not engage in political activities. And the way they enforce that is when these issues are brought to them or when they find incidences of nonprofits engaging in political activities, they investigate and they can revoke the charitable status of that organization and they can charge fines. I think it's going to be challenging for the IRS, which has been for decades understaffed, to really patrol the current law. And if it's repealed, it's going to be even more difficult for them to provide regulatory oversight to nonprofits that will be engaged in not only political speech, but will also be open to engage in fundraising in a very different way and be able to involve themselves in political elections.
Why did Lyndon B. Johnson decide this was a good idea?
We would love to say that it was for altruistic reasons that he was trying to protect the nonprofit sector and keep it out of the political fray. But actually, what was happening was he was being targeted in one of his reelection campaigns by an individual who was involved with a nonprofit. And this provision in the law would keep that person in their nonprofit role from opining on the election at all. What it created, though, was a safe harbor for nonprofits and for faith-based organizations because they knew that this bright line allowed them to engage in activities, to problem solve, to have opinions on issues, but so long as they didn't get into endorsing or opposing political candidates, they were able to engage in whatever speech they liked. This blurs the lines, and if the Johnson Amendment is repealed, it blurs the lines, and it also removes that safe harbor for nonprofits, and it is going to create a great deal of confusion for those organizations wanting to still engage in community dialogue, but remain nonpartisan.
How can this be problematic for faith-based organizations?
It's going to be interesting. For some, they will say that it actually won't be problematic. They'll say this essentially unchains them and gives them free speech rights that they feel are enshrined in the First Amendment of the Constitution. For other organizations, this could be interesting for faith leaders who may get pressured to involve themselves in political campaigns when they think that it could harm the organization. It also could put 501c3 organizations, both faith-based organizations and others, in an odd space when it comes to political contributions, because now money, if the Johnson Amendment is repealed, it could open up the opportunity for political campaigns to be channeled through 501c3 organizations. I think it clouds the marketplace in the charitable space for not only faith leaders, but for nonprofits in general, if it were repealed.
And this, of course, would need to be approved by Congress.
It would. It would need to be passed by the House and Senate and, of course, signed by the president. The majorities, the president's party, make this less of an uphill climb. I think when Congress begins to study this and hear back from local constituents, I think it becomes a little bit more complicated than a simple repeal.
Does it impact other 501c3s?
Absolutely. Any 501c3 organization that would want to engage in political activity would be affected by the repeal. And it would also change the regulations for 501c3 organizations. And the IRS would have to figure out what the new rules would be. And that will create a pretty interesting regulatory conversation at the IRS and in communities across the country.
For anybody not familiar, can you give some examples of other 501c3s?
Habitat for Humanity is a 501c3 organization. Goodwill United Way is another one. The local smaller charities, including food banks and the organizations that sponsor scouts, are usually all 501c3 organizations.
All of these organizations could also have a political voice or create a super PAC.
They could. And to be clear, those organizations and the people that support them could have that sort of political voice today, but they would need to do it under a different organizational structure. There's 527s, which are political organizations that provided nonprofit status, provided that they follow certain rules, and they have to disclose donors, and they have to be really transparent about their activities, which is why a number of individuals and organizations choose not to go that route and try to find other ways so that they can protect the identity of their donors and move more money around through different charitable organizations. So this puts C3s in the center of that, and it'll be difficult to tease out the money if local organizations and statewide organizations and national organizations that are chartered as C3s get involved in the political space.
Kyle Caldwell, Executive Director at the Dorothy Johnson Center for Philanthropy at Grand Valley State University. Thank you so much.
Thank you.